C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 20. April 2023 wurde in Wien die jüngste Veröffentlichung der Euromemo Group, das Euromemorandum 2023, präsentiert. Es trägt den folgenden Titel: Europe in Poly Crisis – Struggles for Survival, Climate and Energy Justice. In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Die Euromemo Group ist ein im Jahr 1995 gegründetes Netzwerk europäischer Ökonominnen, Sozialwissenschaftlerinnen und Rechtswissenschaftlerinnen. Die Gruppe gibt alljährlich das sogenannte Euromemorandum heraus, das sich mit aktuellen Entwicklungen in der EU beschäftigt. Im Jahr 2022 etwa zum Thema »Gefangen zwischen der Covid-19-Krise und dem Krieg in der Ukraine«. Der Hintergrund zum Euromemorandum 2023 »Europe in Poly Crisis – Struggles for Survival, Climate and Energy Justice«. Die neoliberale, globale und europäische Ordnung befindet sich in einer Polykrise. Die als einander gegenseitig verstärkende multiple Schocks mit zunehmender Komplexität verstanden wird. Das Euromemorandum 2023 orientiert sich am Emissions Gap Report, der alljährlich vom Umweltprogramm der Vereinten Nationen zum Thema Treibhausgasausstoß und Klimawandel herausgegeben wird. Die Zeit für schrittweise Veränderungen scheint vorbei. Nur eine tiefgreifende wirtschaftliche Transformation kann die Menschheit vor einer Katastrophe bewahren. Das Euromemo 2023 analysiert die Polykrise, mit der Europa konfrontiert ist, kritisiert die EU-Politik und bietet radikale politische Alternativen an. Magnus Rühner vom King's College in London hat die zentralen Inhalte des Euromemo am 20. April im C3 vorgestellt und fasst eingangs die Bausteine der aktuellen Polykrise zusammen.
Climate change, the COVID-19 pandemic, the war in Ukraine, the energy crisis, the cost of living crisis, the emergent hegemonic rivalry between the United States and China, care crisis in aging societies, which is really a crisis of social reproduction, social inequalities and crisis of democracy. These are some of the things that we have talked about over many, many years, and some of them are new, and they are, you know, from year to another we've focused it. But we thought that, you know, thinking about all these things together, so hence the concept of polycrisis.
Dann stellt Rühner die vier Kapitel des Euromemo 2023 vor.
There is a chapter on the macroeconomic outlook, a chapter on dealing with the cost of living crisis, a chapter on the climate crisis and the need for rapid socio-ecological transformation, and finally a chapter on the global disorder and its repercussions on the future of the EU. So in terms of the macroeconomic outlook, the headlines there is, you know, the return of inflation and the critique of the response of the EU, which mainly has been, and the ECB, which mainly has been on the monetary policy side, the rise of interest rates and so on and so forth, an argument for price controls in key sectors, particularly food and energy, would have been a more appropriate policy, and also to address the inflation through fiscal policy and a change in the inflationary target rate. We related this to a major argument that we made over a number of years now, that the sort of the key plank for a socio-ecological transformation should be a major public investment program as an alternative to the European Green Deal, emphasizing federal fiscal transfer mechanisms and a democratization of forms of governance. And there is a sort of a subheading on the Growth and Stability Pact there. In the global disorder and its repercussions on the future of the EU, I think the key theme there is that there is a connection between the neoliberal model of development and the emergent geopolitical conflicts that, of course, in particular in Europe, takes itself the form of the war in Ukraine And I hope that I'm okay with Heike to kind of characterize the basic analysis here is that this is a manifestation of inadequate institutions in the final analysis. And the dynamic is more in line with Polanyi's double movement and perhaps drawing also on Piketty here, rather than Ernst Haase's notion of spillover effects. So neoliberal forms of development is actually generating more social and political conflicts that also take geopolitical manifestations, rather than the liberal idea that economic integration will, in an evolutionary way, provide the basis for interdependence and peaceful coexistence at the social and political level. And that is essentially a question of inadequate institutions, and in the final analysis also the forces underlying the creation of those institutions.
Magnus Rühner wendet sich dem Kapitel Dealing with the Cost of Living Crisis too.
I mean, the chapters always have to be seen in relation to one another. And this chapter needs to be seen very much in line with the macroeconomic chapter. The chapter actually acknowledges some important relative progress in the social field in European policy development. So, you know, the action plan for European Pillar of Social Rights, the Directive of Adequate Minimum Wages, the Commission proposal and the Council recommendation on adequate minimum income, and the European Care Strategy are seen as relatively progressive developments. But it is difficult to see how this can be reconciled with a general thrust of economic policy in the present, but also, of course, against the backdrop of austerity that goes back at least to the Eurozone crisis. Again, it points to the ongoing austerity in public services and the crisis of social reproduction. It calls for a rights-based approach rather than workfare, appeals to wage increases and an indexation of minima. And of course, this is not happening with the minimum wages. There is no indexation mechanism of it. I mean, it also calls for a rights-based approach to benefits and public services hit by years of austerity.
Zur Steigerung von Energie- und Nahrungspreisen schreibt die Euro Memo Group, Zitat: Ebenso global ist die seit Ende 2021 aufkommende Energie- und Nahrungsmittelkrise. Die Wiedereröffnung der Wirtschaft, gepaart mit zunehmender Finanzspekulation sowohl im Energie- als auch im Agrarbereich und auf Rohstoffmärkten, führte zu einem schnellen Preisanstieg. Die russische Invasion in der Ukraine verschärfte die Situation dramatisch, insbesondere in Europa, nachdem Russland die Exporte drastisch gekürzt hatte, als Vergeltung für die Sanktionen westlicher Regierungen zur Unterstützung der Ukraine. Die Last dieser Krise wird überproportional auf ärmere Bevölkerungsgruppen fallen und große Teile der Bevölkerung in die Armut treiben. Zitat Ende. Im Zusammenhang mit dem Kapitel über die Klimakrise kommt Magnus Rühner auch auf die sogenannte Green Finance, auf nachhaltige Investitionsangebote der größten Vermögensverwalter, zu sprechen.
The chapter starts by pointing out that we are approaching or have already passed the tipping point for keeping global warming within 1.5 degrees, and we essentially have, as IPCC says, about 4.5 years of the carbon budget left. And this points to the urgent need for a 4.3 trillion investments globally by 2030. We then connect this to the complete inadequacies of current strategies, in particularly in regards to the European Green Deal. There has been a recurring Euromemo critique of the EGD relying on blended finance as an aspect of finance-led capitalism. And this year's Euromemo on this score is amplifying this a lot more than previous Euromemos have done by looking much more in depth at how, if you will, global finance is operating, or how green finance is operating. And there are really kind of two themes here. One is the domination of the big three financial companies, BlackRock, Vanguard and State Street, in green finance. And managing $20 trillion with large shareholdings of fossil fuel corporations supporting carbon major resolutions at AGBs. So really, they, from that point of view, green finance is more a kind of a marketing mechanism, whereas in fact, they are still very, very much vested and invested in the carbon majors. So the certification of these kind of assets are self-labeled. The providers really kind of define green finance themselves. They are based on the idea of a notional financing gap, which is based on retrofitting existing built environments, whereas the built environment, etc., would actually need to be radically transformed. The chapter also briefly talks about the ecological limitations of the Chinese model of development and the Belt and Road, and then relate this to geopolitical developments that then are elaborated in chapter 4.
Marika Frangakis befasst sich in ihren Ausführungen mit makroökonomischen Kennzahlen, zunächst mit dem GDP, dem Bruttoinlandsprodukt. Sie zeigt dazu eine Grafik, die die letzten 15 Jahre seit der Finanzkrise 2008 abbildet.
There's an upward trend, not fast, which then is followed by a plunge in 2020 and then starts going up again a few years later. The US is above the EU and the EU is above the Eurozone. So this is a very kind of the picture of the past 15 years. Towards the end of that graph, you can see the little lines are kind of hesitating a little. And in fact, what you have is at the end of 2022, you have a drop. You have a fall of minus 0.1. It's not much. But if you look down the column on your left-hand side, you can see that big economies like Germany or Hungary or Poland have much higher rates of decline. So this is a worrying picture. On the right-hand side, you have the main elements, components of GDP, their movement, and you can see that what Keynesians would call the effective demand, which is consumer consumption and household consumption and investment going down. Imports, of course, also go down. And this is partly, only partly, made up by the government consumption increasing and exports increasing. So this is what I call flirting with stagnation. This is not a good picture. It is a worrying one.
Nach dem GDP kommt Marika Frangakis auf die Beschäftigungssituation in Europa zu sprechen.
Unemployment reached a peak after the global financial crisis started and then started falling. Again, you can see that it goes up quite significantly due to the pandemic, comes down again. It's 6% in the EU and 6.6, about 7% in the Eurozone. These figures refer to February this year. 6% on average in general, that's unemployment, but 14.5% for the under 25s. It is the young people who bear the brunt of unemployment. 29% of the young people under 25 in Spain are unemployed. These young people will migrate at some point and serve the needs of other economies.
Inflation ist ein Thema, das zurzeit in aller Munde ist.
And of course, the mainstream guys, economists, consider inflation as part of the crisis. But inflation is the result of the crisis. When you talk about polycrisis, you don't include inflation. You include everything else that has caused inflation to happen.
Die Inflation liegt aktuell in der EU bei rund 6,9%.
You can see that inflation has been very low. At some point, it was even negative. But it's picking up sometime in 2021. And you can also see the components of what makes up this rate of inflation. The thin red line is energy. If you look across the table, go down to energy, and you can see that in March 2022, the energy price inflation was 44.3%, which is incredible. So that was due to the disruptions, supply disruptions, because of the lifting of the restrictions during the pandemic. As the restrictions were lifted, there was a push across a number of things, with energy sort of having the greater push. Commodities also were pushed up in terms of prices. So you have, on the one hand, supply was limited and therefore it had to respond. You had pent-up demand. And of course, you have speculation. Under these conditions, this is a party for speculators. But of course, that is transitory.
Sagt Marika Frangakis. Heikki Patomäki ist im Rahmen der Präsentation des Euromemo 2023 per Video aus Finnland zugeschaltet. Er wird sich in seinem Statement auf das Euro-Memo Kapitel 4 mit dem Titel The Global Disorder and its Repercussions on the Future of the EU beziehen. Darüber steht zusammenfassend im Euro-Memorandum. Zitat: In einer eng vernetzten Weltwirtschaft geschieht keine größere Entwicklung isoliert. Interdependenz kann leicht zu einer Waffe werden, wie die Beziehungen zwischen den USA und China zeigen. Eine Menge hängt von der Fähigkeit der Akteure ab, gemeinsame Probleme in friedlicher Zusammenarbeit zu lösen. In den 2000er Jahren begann der Niedergang der Global Governance. Globale Probleme sind ungelöst geblieben, das kann die Lage verschärfen und soziale Konflikte generieren. Zitat Ende. Zur Erklärung: Neben zwischenstaatlichen internationalen Beziehungen können in diese Prozesse auch Nichtregierungsorganisationen, Bürgerbewegungen und multinationale wirtschaftliche Organisationen sowie die globalen Finanzmärkte einbezogen werden. Im Euro-Memorandum heißt es weiter: Der Aufstieg nationalistisch-autoritärer Orientierungen vertieft den aktuellen globalen Stillstand bei Global Governance. Zitat Ende. Eine aktuelle Krise in Europa ist natürlich der Krieg zwischen Russland und der Ukraine. In Bezug auf Verhandlungen zu einem Friedensabkommen steht im Euro-Memorandum zu lesen. Zitat: Die Beteiligung der Vereinten Nationen ist unerlässlich. Doch ein bloßes Friedensabkommen allein reicht nicht aus, um die anhaltenden Desintegrationstendenzen umzukehren. Eine Reihe weitreichender, langfristiger Reformen in der Steuerung der Weltwirtschaft sind erforderlich. Zitat Ende.
So we have this conflict at the heart of Europe. And the processes leading to this war, they involve many of those developments that I very briefly summarized in the global political economy. It has involved the insecurity dynamics of the 2000s and 2010s and various processes of securitization that is also internally and externally connected to processes of de-democratization as well. Well, the main problem of this war in Ukraine, of course, lies in the possibility of further escalation. And in particular, nuclear war is now on the horizon in a way that it hasn't been since the early 1980s, or perhaps some people claim, since the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Now, this seems to give almost like a Kantian imperative to de-escalate the conflict. So from a moral perspective, and this something is obviously at the beginning of some sort of peace negotiations in Ukraine. And there are plenty of good possibilities about how this could be done without actually rewarding Russia for its invasion. The role of the United Nations should be emphasized and so on and so forth. However, we argue in this Euromemo that the main peace agreement alone would be insufficient to reverse the ongoing disintegrative tendencies, both in the EU and globally.
In Bezug auf Desintegration in Europa sagt Heikki Patomeki:
But anyway, so we can conclude that the EU, from the internal point of view, continues to, if you like, sleepwalk towards further disintegration, if not toward outright catastrophe. So we have the new era of stagnation at hand, but it seems that we are also heading towards new rounds of austerity across the EU. And this has very predictable consequences. Now, while the EU faces internal opposition to further integration, including in terms of developing common fiscal policy, as we remember, the standard Euro memo demand is to at least to have at least a budget of 5% of the GDP of the EU. And this is unlikely to be realized when we have a major opposition to any further integration in the EU. And this is coming from two directions, populist nationalists and also from the so-called frugal member states, very in a rather or somewhat different ways, but nonetheless. At the same time, despite these tendencies, the EU is searching for strategic autonomy, and the possibilities of realizing that are dependent on the circumstances, how things evolve.
Dann kommt Patomeki auf den Einfluss zu sprechen, den der Krieg zwischen Russland und der Ukraine auf die internationalen Beziehungen hat.
The effects of the war in Ukraine on the EU-US relations have been ambiguous. On the one hand, the EU has been increasingly subordinated to the US hegemony and become part of the, or many of the things have not been articulated through NATO. But there have also been new emerging complaints about some of the consequences of the new developments and the way the United States seems to be benefiting from them. One of the consequences of these global developments has been that the US-China conflict that has also the trade war as a key component has been now extended to EU-China relations as well. And that's a very much part of the process of the world being divided into two different camps, if that's the right term. So there's one possible way the EU can find unity without actually building more democratic and social, fiscally more meaningful, ecologically more sustainable structures, and that's by way of militarizing the EU. And this scenario about the disciplinary and militarized EU has become more likely as mutually supportive circumstances are now coinciding and coalesce. And this is particularly true if a Republican candidate wins the next US elections. So what we might be seeing in the later part of the 2020s is EU unity through securitization and common enemies. It might even involve some military Keynesianism as well.
Heikki Patomäki führt weiter aus.
So what are the consequences from a global point of view? Many, as already explained, these contradictions, these economic paradoxes and so on and so forth are in no way confined to Europe. And the struggles of income distribution are taking place in the world over. At the same time, the idea of competitiveness, for instance, is something that has been generalized across the world economy. If the EU acts in a way that tries to increase its competitiveness vis-à-vis the rest of the world, this could only happen at the expense of other countries and overall global demand. And this is a key problem. And if this is generalized as it tends to be, this will struggle for the world economy as a whole.
Abschließend wirft Heikki Patomäki einen Blick in die Zukunft.
The future of the EU is therefore dependent on the dynamics of this wider world, which of course can be shaped by the EU because it is one of the major actors in the system. And also, it is the only one that is not a sovereign state, as B is not yet in the traditional sense, or great power in that sense. So, to summarize at the end of the section 4, we propose some concrete proposals in addition to the peace agreement in Ukraine that cover the world economy as a whole. These include the reorganization of the world monetary system in terms of a common clearing union. It also concerns trade as well. Global taxes such as greenhouse gas tax and worldwide public investment programs to make developments more even and sustainable.
Sagt Heikki Patomäki. In der anschließenden Diskussion kommt eine makroökonomische Frage zur Inflation und zur Erhöhung der Zinssätze durch die Zentralbanken aus dem Publikum. Der Leitzins ist der von einer Zentralbank im Rahmen ihrer Geldpolitik festgelegte Zinssatz, zu dem sie mit den ihr angeschlossenen Kreditinstituten Geschäfte abschließt. Dazu Marika Frangakis.
The Fed started raising interest rates in March last year. And it's gone on quite fast. The Bank of England has raised interest rates 11 times, and it's, carrying on. The idea is that inflation has to fall down to this magic number, 2%, which is just out of nowhere, it could be 3%, 4%. In fact, Blanchard has argued that it should be 3%. I would say that 3% is the minimum. It should go up to 4%. Because of the way the economy is developing. The Fed started, there's a kind of fraternity of central banks. So since the Fed started, that's important. And the ECB took a while to follow. At some point though, it has to follow because the interest rate changes feed into the foreign exchange markets. So the dollar became more stronger, that influences trade, and that influences production, and so on. It's a circle, and everything is connected. So once the exercise of raising interest rates started, economically it would follow. The central banks took it on themselves to fight inflation. And then once they start doing that, then you have the question of their credibility. You know, they have to appear to be credible. In other words, their job is to safeguard price stability. And to do so, they raise interest rates. And when they do that, they have to carry on doing it because then they're credible. The financial markets will consider them to be credible. If they don't consider them to be credible, then you have problems in the financial markets.
Sagt Euromemo Group Mitglied Marika Frangakis. In der heutigen Sendung von C3 Radio haben wir über die aktuelle Ausgabe des Euro-Memorandum berichtet. Man kann dieses auf der folgenden Website herunterladen: www.euromemo.eu. Zur Inflation hat Marika Frangakis in der aktuellen Ausgabe von Kurswechsel einen Artikel geschrieben. Siehe www.beigewum.at. Am 6. Juni gibt es im C3 in der Sensengasse 3 ab 18 Uhr eine Podiumsdiskussion zum folgenden Thema: Rassismuskritische Arbeit in Bibliotheken, Archiven und Museen. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat und jederzeit auf Spotify. Folgen Sie bitte der ÖFSE und C3 Radio auch auf Facebook. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.